it would be rude not to have a taste first, I think. Have you ever tried Mr. Whack before?
I haven't.
Have a go at this. Doesn't surprise me. Not many people have. Are you a big coffee liqueur drinker?
I'm not.
No one is.
It makes me think of Tia Maria and Kahlua.
Exactly right. Well, this is Mr. Black. Go and have a taste of that.
Well, seeing as it's for work.
And 11:30 in the morning.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's not bad, right? Most people have the same reaction when they try Mr. Black. The first one is generally, wow, what is that? And the second one is they go, oh my God, that tastes like coffee.
That's Tom Baker, the founder of Mr. Black, which, as you heard, is a coffee liqueur. Hello, I'm Richard Ady. This is The Money, RN's economic show, and there is a reason for me having such an early one. It's crowdfunding, which got Mr. Black started. Kate Pearce is with me.
Hello, Richard. When I think of crowdfunding, I think of GoFundMe or Kickstarter. They're those big ones based in the US. But Matt Vitali is an Australian who knows quite a bit more than I do. He's completing his doctoral thesis at Monash Uni on the regulation of crowdfunding.
Kickstarter started in 2009, and since then they've raised over $1 billion and something like over 40,000 projects. And it's become a way for people who have interesting innovations, and they're very big in the tech space, to launch their products to a global crowd and get support for that. Now, a couple of things about Kickstarter is that it is a reward-based crowdfunding platform. So that means that people, in exchange for backing a project, get a reward, which could include the product itself. So it works as a pre-purchase mechanism for a project in some ways. But they also use what's known as an all-or-nothing model. So the project creator will set a target, what they need for their project to get off the ground, if you like. And unless they meet that target, let's say it's $40,000, if they get $35,000 in pledges, then they don't get anything. But if they get $40,000 or indeed over, they'll get those funds, but they will need to honour the rewards that they've offered to their backers.
So Matt mentioned the reward model, and that's the one we'll talk most about today. But there are others.
It's useful to view them on a spectrum. So at the lower end of the spectrum, there's a donation model of crowdfunding, which is really just using a platform to advance funds and not expecting anything in return. And then there's the reward-based model, which you've described. Then moving up the chain, there's a debt-based model of crowdfunding, which is also known as peer-to-peer lending, which has been prevalent in the States for many years now and is starting to become more common in Australia. But that's really having individuals who typically unable to source finance from traditional methods and typically for personal reasons, they're able to source finance from other individuals that are willing to advance their money, but really all they're expecting in return is repayment of the debt and some interest. And then at the end of the spectrum is equity crowdfunding. Crowdsourced equity funding is what we like to call it in Australia, or what regulators have decided to call it in Australia. And this model sees the business or the project creator giving up or selling part of their business via the crowdfunding platform. And then the backers become shareholders, if you like, in the business. And as you'd imagine, it's a very highly regulated area. Fundraising is, you know, every country has quite rightly very onerous obligations that are there for fundraisers, usually to protect investors from fraudulent activity and the lack of skill of certain companies. But globally, many countries have implemented regimes to reduce the amount of regulation that exists for fundraising to really facilitate crowdfunding platforms to engage in this model of crowdfunding.
So I guess the new question then is how much crowdfunding is worth?
Well, the best person to ask that might just be Luke Deer. He's a postdoctoral research associate in political economy at the University of Sydney, research associate with the Cambridge Centre for Alternative Finance. But most importantly, for our purposes, he was the research director for the first comprehensive study of crowdfunding in the Asia Pacific, and that reported in March.
In the Asia Pacific, over 102 billion US last year. The majority of that is in China, something like 99% of that is in China, so over 101 billion US dollars in China. And most of that is really debt-based crowdfunding, and it's probably quite different to reward and donation-based crowdfunding, but it's peer-to-peer lending. It's sort of new online alternative finance providers lending, short-term lending, small loans to consumers, entrepreneurs, small business owners in China. So the majority would be debt-based crowdfunding, and some people who run those platforms probably prefer to call that peer-to-peer lending or marketplace lending.
All right, so more than 100 billion US in the Asia Pacific, 99% of it China. What about Australia? What's our crowdfunding?
Australia has grown from a small base relatively recently to become one of the largest crowdfunding based countries in the Asia Pacific. There's really China, Japan, New Zealand and Australia are probably the top four. I think Australia is the third highest. In Australia, there is, again, two quite distinct spaces. So on the one hand, you've had a big growth of business financing through online platforms, and that's got a crowd element or a peer-to-peer element. That's the biggest chunk of what's happening in Australia. That's over $250 million US, I think, last year. On the other hand, you've got a very vibrant donation and reward crowdfunding community and platforms in Australia. And that's quite substantial. I think the reward crowdfunding is over $28 million in Australia.
And the total comes to about 348, I think, altogether, 348
million. 348
million
for 2015. And that's quite a substantial increase from something like 80 million in 2014. So there's basically been, you know, almost a tripling in the volume of crowdfunding type financing in Australia in the past year.
Tom Baker, the Mr. Black guy, isn't captured in those figures. He raised his money in 2013. But why take this approach?
I'll paint the picture for you. You know, we tried to use crowdfunding because at the time we had this product that no one in Australia kind of really drank. I mean, a few people drink coffee liqueur, but sort of no one under the age of 30, really. We weren't really sure if it was a sort of a commercial idea. You know, we weren't really sure if we were going to lose the house or not. So we thought, well, why don't we use crowdfunding as a way of both testing the idea to see if people actually like it and as a really good way to connect with progressive coffee drinking young Australians that really might like this sort of product. And no one in the world had used crowdfunding to sell booze before, so we thought, let's just put the idea out and see if anyone would bite. And bite they did. We wanted to sell 200 bottles, so $10,000 worth of booze, and then we thought, if we can sell that, we'll have a business. And we ended up selling just north of 26 grand and over 500 bottles. So we kind of knew from then it was going to be a thing.
Tom did all this through the largest Australian crowdfunder, Possible.
I actually had a quick look at the website, and it's sort of like a page of ads for ideas, and they fall into three categories: musicians, artistic ventures, and then commercial ventures like the Mr. Black. There's one for Szechuan pepper gin that I thought was pretty cute, and then there's a sort of resources environmental charity zone. So there was one for sustainability in the suburbs. It was an online toolkit. So they're really quite interesting, and they're like little pitches to people out there. Rick Chen is one of the co-founders.
Possible started back in Sydney in 2010 when me and my business partner wanted to build a platform for artists to pre-sell their artwork so they can get the money up front. One of the issues that we identified is that a lot of artists and creatives projects sort of never get to see the light because they're just not that initial money put on the table to make it happen. That's what we see a big problem here, where we try to tackle.
Since 2010, Possible has gone from strength to strength.
Possible has the highest success rate of all major platforms globally, which is something that we're really proud of. Our success rate is around 57% to 63%, depending on the month. Just to give you a rough idea, compared to some overseas platforms, quite often their success rate is around 18% to 9%.
That's quite a difference.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons being we actually do a lot of education work. For example, the free workshop that we mentioned in most of the major cities in Australia. And we provide a lot of hand-holding process to make sure everybody gets all the information they need to know before they start running a campaign to maximize the chance of being successful. Because it can be a quite long and tedious process, and you definitely wouldn't want to, you know, just rush into it and without actually knowing what you're doing.
So say I wanted to put money into a Possible project. How do I go about that?
if you are, you know, anyone come onto Possible website, you find a project you're passionate about, you're interested in, you can just directly pledge money to that project online and we'll take your credit card details. In return, you can choose a what we call reward from the project creator that offers back for your money. So the reward, you know, quite often can be a CD from a musician, you know, exclusive film screening night tickets from a filmmaker, or, you know, maybe someone's going to come to your house and cook you a Saturday night dinner.
I understand there's often several different layers of reward. Depending on how much money you're prepared to put in, you get a different level of reward.
Absolutely. We suggest quite often to have around 7 rewards, ranging from, you know, $5-$10 up to a few $1,000s, depending on what you can offer. And from a supporter's point of view, you can choose any reward that matches your dollar amount they're happy to support. Quite often, those rewards will be exclusive experiences and recognitions and products that's not previously offered on the market.
And that's precisely what Tom Baker and his Mr. Black co-founder Philip Moore offered when they used Possible. So apart from getting a bottle of coffee liqueur, were Mr. Black's crowdfunders getting anything else?
They were. They were coming on the journey of a company. So that's it. It was a pre-sale model. Equity crowdfunding was and still is illegal in Australia. But yeah, all they were doing is giving me at a discount. I think it was about $50 a bottle. Retail is now $60. But they were getting it at a discount, but they got to come on the journey. You know, they got exclusive previews to events we did. They got all our bottles have sort of artwork on the back. You know, they got signed artwork from the artists. They got invited to launch parties we had. Yeah, so it was more they came on the journey of launching the company with us. That was probably what they were swapping their money for.
So does that mean that as well as your first customers, you had a bunch of evangelists out there in the community for you?
Massively. And they still are our biggest evangelists. Like, we do an event and I know the first 50 people through the door are going to be the same, you know, some of those people that did the first crowdfunding. I still, you know, if I'm doing a tasting at the London Coffee Festival and someone's like, oh, I bought a bottle of this online off Possible. And I was like, that was a long time ago, you know, even 3 years ago. But yeah, they still are our biggest fans, are to this day. You know, I see the same faces at all the events.
So that started 2.5 years ago. How are they going now?
Not too badly, as it happens.
Well, thankfully, I kind of was good luck and good fortune. Our friends at Dan Murphy's decided to take the product on quite early on, which meant that was, you know, we sell quite a lot of booze through them. You know, they've got over 200 stores and a lot of big independent bottle shops and bars all around Australia. It took Mr. Black on. So we kind of had that constant revenue stream of people buying booze month in, month out, which has kind of been able to support the business. So it kind of, we didn't need to go back and rattle the tin to people with our evangelists. We could just invite them along the parties. You know, we didn't need to take their money to do so. But now, I mean, fast forward, you know, 2.5 years from when we did the crowdfunding, we're in over 500 bars, bottle shops and restaurants in all over Australian capitals, London, all over the UK and Hong Kong as well. We've got 7 staff and we'll probably be in the US by the start of next year. So we're really growing at a rapid rate of knots.
The big Australian crowdfunding story is the Flow Hive, invented by a father and son duo from Byron Bay. And in fact, it's not just a big Australian story, it's one of the big global crowdfunding stories.
Now you can simply turn a tap and pure fresh honey flows right out of your hive. Delicious, ready for you to eat.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's honey on tap.
They used Indiegogo's their platform, and they raised $600,000 in the first 2 hours of their campaign. And it's been a fantastic example of a really novel, innovative idea and just the potential for a global audience to really get behind something that meets a need or strikes a chord with people. Their example has been quite interesting in terms of the issues that or challenges that successful project creators face. They've been successful in meeting the demands of their backers, but there is that problem that you can be a victim of your own success, and $15 million in pre-sale orders effectively for beehives means that you need to go out and build all of these beehives, and some organisations are able to do that better than others, but it does present challenges.
They are going to have to build a factory in order to build all the beehives, surely.
They actually ended up with orders for around 20,000 hives at the end of the first couple of days. So yes, they will.
This is The Money with me, Richard Ady, and today we are talking all about crowdfunding. And I bet you didn't realise that we'd be having some crowdfunded music but here it is.
Every time that came before us, in a world led before us, middle ground left us in its wake.
And I'm with Leanne D'Souza, who actually, you helped pay for this, didn't you, Leanne?
In my own small way, yes, I suppose.
Who are we listening to?
It was a band called Halfway, who are from Brisbane. And, oh, there's a lot of them. I think they're like an eight-piece band. And that's their fifth record. You know, I contributed to this one. I think also the previous record was crowdfunded as well, which won an Independent Music Award. But I love them. They're a great band.
Are they the only band you fund or the only artist or what?
No, many over the years, actually. I was trying to remember who was the first one, but it was probably 5 or 6 years ago in the very early days of crowdfunding. But, yeah, I probably a couple of things a month would throw, you know, a 20 or 50, throw a pineapple at it.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you, and you do this through crowdfunding, like a particular platform?
Not always. I mean, a lot of them are, I think, possible because it's Australian owned and a lot of Australian artists use it. But yeah, all different. And often it's not the platform that catches my attention. It'll be the artist or, you know, someone is third party through social media and think, oh, they're great or that sounds interesting. I think the beauty of crowdfunding is actually you're raising money to help make the art. And traditionally that's been quite hard for an artist, you know, to one thing to manage the money once you've got it, but the second thing to find that amount of money in the first place.
Right. So is that what you get? Because I know there are often different levels of reward with crowdfunding. What are the rewards you get?
I'm funny. I know some people, you know, do the donation for the reward or the special things. I remember Kate Miller-Heidke did phone calls for people's birthdays and all sorts of things. But me personally, I actually often give the money and tick that I don't actually want a particular reward unless it's the CD, you know, and then I will say, oh, yeah, sure, send me the record. Or, and Halfway did this, they send you a link so you actually hear the music, you know, sometimes a month, 2 months before anyone else hears it if you've donated.
So you're really in it for the music?
I am.
That's all, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, not every project is a music project. Sometimes it's to help an artist tour. I gave some money to a dancer who made a dance film called Ward of the State. That was Claire Marshall. So that was really about her crowdfunding a film budget. I'd say 80% of the things I donate to are to get the music.
And how much do you think you're spending on this, Leanne?
Oh, interesting. I just did my last quarter to do all this getting ready for the end of year. I think in the last 12 months or this financial year, I probably donated about $1,200.
So $100 a month?
Yeah, it just makes sense.
That's probably what many of us would spend on coffee, actually.
Easily. Well, you think $50, yeah, $25 a week.
Yeah.
Easily.
Mm. I bet you're still buying the coffees all the same.
All the same. But also you think, you know, before streaming and what have you, you know, you would go into a record store and buy 3 or 4 CDs a month for a couple of $100 a month. Well, I did as a music fan. So, and now I don't find I buy CDs like I used to because of streaming.
You are formerly in the music industry.
I was. I spent a couple of decades as an artist manager.
So you have a particular, I suppose, interest.
Interest, yeah, I do. I mean, it's my hobby now. It's my passion. I'm very passionate, and I'm passionate about new music and emerging artists. Although emerging doesn't mean they're necessarily young. The guys in Halfway are all, you know, mid-40s. But I think for me, you know, yes, I donate to other charities, but I really see, and now it's harder than ever for young, you know, artists and artists to make work in Australia. So I sort of think, oh, well, I'd prefer to give them something than some of the bigger NGOs and charities.
And do you feel more connected to them?
I do. Yeah, there's one artist, Alyssa Lajana, who's amazing at crowdfunding. So she crowdfunded a significant amount of money, like $15,000 to make her last record called the Hidden History Project, I think is what it's called. But she feels really connected. So as she's travelled around gathering stories, so she works with Indigenous communities on songwriting with them and has done this recording project, she updates and emails all of us that have given her a donation. So we know where she is in the country and who she's met and a couple of stories. I mean, it's really like a little journal. So I feel very connected to her record. And it's been a long, like that was 2 years ago that we gave her the money and the album's out next week, I think. So it's a lot, you know, being part of that whole journey has been really nice.
That's really interesting. And in a way, it's like a grown-up's version of the fan club.
I think so. It's a bit like that. I mean, yes, you're a fan, but there's also an element of trust. You know, you're giving up your money before you get anything and, you know, the artist could disappear or what have you. So, yeah, you really are you know, buying into something special with them, and they need you. You know, you feel very much appreciated, you know, when you get their little thank yous and what have you. They're really, they are very grateful.
That's the donor end of crowdfunding, almost a form of charity, because Leanne's not really expecting anything in return. What she's really focused on is the musicians and the artists that she wants to support.
Yes, it's a very different situation to the Oculus Rift, the virtual reality headset that hit the consumer market just over 2 months ago.
Oculus Rift was a startup virtual reality company that raised close to $12 million on Kickstarter for their original prototype, if you like. And it was extremely well supported and got a lot of press and indeed a lot of funding, and it was a successful project. But the success put a lot of attention on the company and the product innovation, such that they were acquired by Facebook for a valuation of close to $1 billion. And it really highlighted this tension that exists in the crowdfunding industry at the moment, in that the people that supported the project at the early days got their reward for being a backer in the project, but were unable to participate in the increase in value that the company achieved when they ultimately sold to Facebook for $1 billion.
Matt isn't quite remembering that right. It was actually $2 billion, which means those who crowdfunded the development of the headset really missed out. And that gets us to the issue of equity crowdfunding here. At the moment, it's not legally possible. Tom Baker from Mr. Black.
I think the real change in Australia needs to come from the government in terms of allowing legislative change. In the UK, I've seen a lot of very similar sized businesses to me can use equity funding. So they can put out a public offer for small amounts of money to start to raise real amounts of money in exchange for equity in their company. I think should we see those changes, and I think they have been tabled, we'll see an explosion in the category for small, medium-sized businesses, especially consumer-facing ones, you know, whether you're in booze or fashion or coffee or things like that, where you can go out to people that drink your product every day and say, would you like some, you know, skin in the game? Would you like to get involved and come on the journey with us, not just as a purchaser, but as an owner? I think that'll really open up the category.
And there is bipartisan support for doing exactly this. The government has put a bill through the House that would give equity crowdfunding a legal and regulatory framework. It was in the Senate when the election was called, and crowdfunding enthusiasts are hoping it will become law regardless of the election result, perhaps even by the end of the year.
So apart from that change, what does the future of crowdfunding look like in Australia? Well, the peer-to-peer lending bit, which Kate and I think is so big it deserves its own program, and we will do it in the future, is growing very quickly. And this may start to affect the banks. Luke Deer from the University of Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think particularly on the financial investment side, that's very much where people who are working in these platforms, people who are looking at the industry, that, I mean, that's very much the trend. And so you're having the unbundling of different financial products from the bank system. People are able to establish new platforms. They're able to source funds from retail investors or from other institutional investors. And, you know, that sector is going to grow internationally, I think. What percentage of the banking system? It won't replace the banking system, but increasingly I think it will emerge in parallel to it. And that trend looks set to continue. It may not experience the same rapid growth it's experienced, but it will be quite substantial. So that will certainly continue, I think, in the future period.
And assuming the law is changed to make equity crowdfunding possible, it will be taken up too, though potential investors need to be aware of the differences between startups and blue chips. Matt Vitale.
If you look at crowdfunding as just another asset class, then its benefits are potentially limited because, as you'd imagine, startups are notoriously risky. You know, a statistic that's often quoted is that 90% of startups fail. So as an asset class for someone to invest their retirement savings and things like that, it's probably not the best. There are probably other asset classes that will meet your needs. And unicorns, these startup businesses that achieve $1 billion valuations, as the name suggests, they're extremely rare. So what is exciting, though, is looking at the advancements and the growth of reward-based crowdfunding, where my observation is that a backer will really look at a project and identify with that over and above what they're expecting to get out of it in terms of a financial return, but more because they really identify with the project or the project creator and what they're trying to do. And I feel that the real potential of equity crowdfunding is marrying the two, the reward-based crowdfunding and equity crowdfunding, to really get people to support projects that they identify with on another level rather than purely in investment terms.
Australia's biggest crowdfunder, Possible, is interested in being involved in equity crowdfunding. But in the meantime, Rick Chen and his team have other plans. They're going to sell their expertise to others so they can do their own crowdfunding.
Through all these years we work at Possible, quite often we work with a lot of partners, organizations from arts organizations to even government funding bodies to corporate. Quite often a lot of people want a mini Possible so they can use as part of what they do. So for example, they could have a competition, they want a crowdfunding component to be in it. The government sometimes use crowdfunding as a match funding to give grants out. Corporate might actually use it as a way to pre-sort of select or gauge demand for their products. So it's a very versatile sort of platform they can use for a lot of different purposes. So we came out with the idea of the product called Possible Base, allows any organization or any person really to launch their own mini sort of Possible platform, completely branded and powered by Possible Engine. And they can mirror their project onto Possible so they can take advantage of Possible's 500,000 user base to actually, you know, get traction for their project.
That's in the future. People like Tom Baker have a business now. But would he have it without crowdfunding?
You know, when we went into this, there was no strategy. We just made a liquid that we really, really liked, and we just chose the best way to get that into the mouths of the people that wanted to drink it, and that happened to be crowdfunding. We didn't really have a plan B. It was just always going to be a brand that we launched with the crowd. You know, drinking is such a social thing, and especially coffee is such a social thing. I think it was always going to be that. So, no, it almost definitely wouldn't exist if it weren't for Possible and for Australian crowdfunding, for sure. I probably wouldn't have done it. You know, it was just such an easy way for us to get Mr. Black into the hands of people that want it.
Tom Baker is the managing director and co-founder of Mr. Black.
You also heard from Rick Chen, co-founder of Possible, doctoral student Matt Vitale, Luke Deer from Sydney University, and music and arts lover Leander Souza.
You can find out more on our homepage at the RN website, abc.net.au/RN. The Money is produced by Kate Piercy and Melanie Christensen. Our sound engineer is Judy Rapley. And I'm Richard Aiden.